Session number 22724, Rosemary Slater, reels 3 and 4. Separated by pause and track marker, left channel informant's mic only, right channel interviewer's mic.
Rosemary Slater, reel 3. Yes, I noticed in one of your photographs that the weaponry. So you obviously had weaponry training.
Yes, and I think that was absolutely terrifying to begin with, as you could imagine, because these guns were not lightweight. And we had targets to do target practice way down in a funny sort of spot, naturally with sandbags and everything around, because it must have been very scary for people with us on the job. But I don't think it lasted terribly long. I think it was just a fad. They thought it was a good idea, so it didn't last long, thank goodness.
Did the signals technology change at all during your time in that work?
No, not really, no. The thing that we did have to do was to take to pieces a few telephones. That, I don't know why, but we did. We had to clean them and put them together again. So that was quite technical. But apart from that, do you see, otherwise it's really entirely by books and paper and, you know, taking down numbers day after day after day, translating numbers and letters, that's really.
And lots of messages were there?
Lots of messages. I mean, they came through, I mean, we were on night duty, there would be quite busy time. We used to try and take it in turn to have one of us snoozing if it wasn't too much. And then we had made toast and cocoa and tea galore, as you can imagine. I think one of the things that absolutely staggered me about meals in the army was at breakfast you could have chops and steaks in Australia, as you could imagine. And being a sergeant, you see, we were part of the sergeant's mess. Well, sergeant's mess do themselves extremely well. I learned to drink beer, which actually, cold beer was very nice in a hot country. I can't remember any other sort of spirits or anything, but beer was very much in evidence.
Did you hear anything about the German and Italian internees who were brought in?
No. My sister had heard much more in Perth, because again, with her Italian censorship, she was being used again and also for interpreting. But then, of course, having the baby rather put a stop to that. But they still used her for translating, and then, because there was quite a big prisoner of war camp in Perth, West Australia, I think, just outside, if I remember rightly.
Were there many refugees who came to Australia? Were you aware of, you know?
Yes, quite a lot. From
escaping, yes, from the Japanese.
And also, you see, a lot came down from Hong Kong and Shanghai, which was quite interesting. But funnily enough, I can't remember in the army anybody else from Malaya or anywhere. I was certainly not in my unit. I was the only one. And as I say, normally they called them Pommies, but being a Scot, I was always known as Scotty. And I think they were intrigued too, I suppose. You know, probably a lot of them had never been to England and not come across a lot of. Funnily enough, there was quite a big population of Italians in Australia, which must have been there some generations, because I remember in Perth, West Australia, there was a very nice Italian woman and her husband. I think he was interned, but she wasn't. And she used to run quite a nice Italian restaurant, which, of course, having been in Italy as children and my mother, she used to lay on marvellous spaghettis and things for us. So, funnily enough, there's always been a lot of Italians in Australia. I suppose the climate in many ways suited them. There were wonderful vegetable gardens of fruit, you see, and the heat was very similar to southern Italy, as you could imagine.
How about the British army? Were there many British people?
No, no, very few. A certain amount of naval liaison officers, because I met three lots from Malaya, who'd evidently got out of Malaya and come down to Australia. And certainly two were Navy, and I think one was Army, but apart from them, I can't remember anybody else. Mostly otherwise it was women and children, a lot of women and children.
Was there any, you know, you've explained about your rabbit, ubiquitous rabbit on yes. the farm. But did Australia suffer much in regards to food shortages
no.
in the war?
No. No, clothing. We did have points for clothing. And I remember that was a bit of a problem for us. But I must tell you, the most amusing thing, when we got to Perth, West Australia, as I say, we went through to a big store and found ourselves in a bedding department. And a nice young man in there came up to Mum and he said, "Can I interest you in beds, madam?" And Mother said, "No, because, you see, we're just birds of paradise." What she'd really meant, we were birds of passage. Mummy's always had to live that down.
Perhaps she thought she was.
Perhaps she thought she was. I thought that was a sweet thing. Mummy was very, always got things wrong. He always teased her. So then I luckily managed to get a posting back to Perth, West Australia, and lived at home with my mother and sister. By this time, my brother had joined the army and managed to get to India and did his training at Bangalore before joining the Gurkhas. I enjoyed being back in Perth. We met a lot of British naval personnel. And I suppose being doing cipher and that kind of thing, I did hear about what they were doing, some of them, which of course was the midget submarines on an island just outside Perth, outside Fremantle, I should say. And long afterwards I heard that they had entered the Singapore harbour and had put limpet mines on a lot of the shipping. They'd done a lot of damage, and they'd gone up by a converted junk from Fremantle, Australia, had sailed all that way up. It was extraordinary, but that is all well documented.
But you heard all
but
this,
we
did
had,
you?
Yes, mm. But of course they were very hush-hush about it, so I didn't hear about it straight away. But I remember one Argyle chap called Ivor Lance, who comes into it very much, and it's probably, again, well documented. Their first raid was very successful, and they got back, because I remember Ivor and two or three others coming back. But the second time, they were caught in Singapore, and they were beheaded. Yes, so, it didn't... That again, of course, we didn't hear till long after the Jap surrender and so on. But they were delightful. We also had Free French Navy, Dutch Navy, and of course, by that time, a lot of American Navy, because you could imagine Fremantle was a port for those, that part of the world very much.
What sort of impact did the Americans make?
Oh, the usual. We met quite a few, and of course Mummy came off very well because she was a terrific smoker, so she was able to get cigarettes and a certain amount of very suspect blue gin, which I don't know where the Americans got that from, whether they brewed it themselves, I don't know. But a nice crowd of French, and we joined the Free French, you know, the Alliance Française, and of course they're very patriotic, and there's stop and sing at the top of a hat, you know, they must say. Dutch were much more circumspect. the British, we used to go on board some of the submarines, which were tiny. We never went on the American ones. They weren't allowed to. The Dutch weren't allowed to. We did go on one or two French destroyers, parties, you know, a lot of service people. But as I say, our tiny little submarines. Now, the extraordinary thing that here now in Courtney Place, there's a man, same age as I am, who was there as one of these submarine chaps. We might have even met up. Isn't it a small world? It's extraordinary, isn't it? But anyway, of course, I was dying to get to India, as you could imagine, with both my father and brother there. And eventually I heard of this thing called the Wasbys, and they were looking for people to join them. In Burma, they needed the extra girls, which they found evidently wasn't easy to get them in India. I suppose there were so few. And so I joined that and was able to get out of the Australian army because I was a British subject. And so I left soon after. In fact, by the time you reached Bombay, the bomb had been dropped, so that the war was virtually over. It must have been about 8 of us, I think, on that ship, if I remember right. I can't remember the name of it. And when we got to Bombay, Daddy had arranged with another army man, and he came on board and he said, oh, your father's arranged for me to get all your equipment for you. So he got me a bedding roll, mosquito net, camp bed, a canvas washing basin thing, and a very funny looking chair, or camping equipment, in other words, and towels and sheets and things. Because by that time, because we hadn't any uniform, we were in our civvies uniform, we stayed at the Taj Mahal Hotel, I suppose, 2 nights. And then we left early one morning on the train from Bombay to Calcutta. There must have been 4 bunks in those trains. And in the middle of the trains was a tin bath, which they put the ice in, I suppose to help to keep us cool on our journeys across. But of course that melted, so you can imagine very soon we were awash, you know, with the movement of the train. But the civilized thing was that at certain stops, like a sort of breakfast, lunch, tea, and a dinner one, we stopped at funny little restaurants at stations on the way. So you got out of the train and you went straight to the restaurant, and there the meal was all prepared for us. They knew exactly the timing, and I mean, you know, it was all organized by the rail transport officer. By that time, we became, I suppose we were under the jurisdiction of the army, so they looked after us most of the way. And then at Calcutta, so we must have had, I think, 2 nights in that journey. Enjoyed our meals at these funny stops. Of course, it's fascinating, India. Once you've been, you want to go back and back, but I haven't, sadly. I thought it was amazing. I think this incredible lot of people at night on these platforms, as you can imagine, where everybody knows that. Rows and rows of these recumbent figures. And then, of course, in the morning, the whole thing starts life again, selling things along the you know, the stations and things. And at Calcutta, we were met by a senior Wasby in full uniform. I don't know who she was, unfortunately. And then from there we went out to a place called Barrackpore. I'm not quite sure how you spell it. I think I've got it down somewhere. It's Barrackpur.
Barrackpur. What's it?
Barrackpur.
Barrackpur.
That I'd probably have to look up if I get the spelling right on that one.
We could check that perhaps a bit later.
Yes, maybe. I think it might be an idea. Mm-hmm. Oh, here we are. Got it. I put down here, our depot was at Barrackpore, which Barrackpur. And it was just outside Calcutta, not very far from Dum Dum, which is the airport. We were fitted for uniforms, and I remember getting leather boots. We all had boots made, which were essential to wear with slacks in the evening because of mosquitoes. And that we had to, that it was, you know, it was an offence, really. You could be held up by the military police if you didn't have your sleeves down and you weren't wearing slacks in the evening. So it was very much one of the rules, even though we weren't officially army, that was essential. From there, we went up to Shillong, which was our main depot, where we were told what to do with our canteens and everything. That was quite a journey because we went by train to, I think it was Jamalpur, and we had to cross the Brahmaputra River by ferry. And then we all got into these ghastly three tanners to go on this winding journey all the way up to Shillong. Thank goodness they stopped now and again. Most of us were sick with the movement. Luckily, a nice chap in a jeep pulled alongside. I could see him looking fairly up. He said, "Are you going up to Shillong?" And I said, "Yes." So he said, "Well, can I give you a lift?" I said, "Oh, God's sake, thank you." And so I did the rest of the journey up by jeep. We had a lovely old house in Shillong, which was taken over by the Wasbys. And that was, oh, it was an enchanting place. A typical hill station with those sort of misty mornings, you know, and fires in the evening. Absolutely lovely. I learned to drive a jeep up and down these tiny little roads, which must have been very hairy for the men teaching me. And we also had funny little ponies that we used to ride about. So we did our training there.
Yes, what and was the training? What did you actually do?
You know, to doing stores and showing how to do stores. And also because we'd be in the canteens, we'd be having cooks. So it was a case of showing the cooks how to make certain things. Like we did an awful lot in the way of slab cakes and that kind of thing. I can't remember an awful lot about that, but those were the essentials, evidently. And then we got our extra, we got winter uniform, because in case we were going to cold places, we got some winter form, I think.
Who were the women at this stage? It would be very interesting to go back to Australia and how you heard of the Wasbys and what sort of representation they had in Australia.
I remember it was an awfully nice woman. Who she was, I have no idea, but I think it comes into the Wasby magazine. And I think her name comes in that. How I heard about it, I'm not very sure.
But they were making an effort to
They were making an effort. They were going round Australia. And I suppose Perth was their last stop on Australia, because they must have done Sydney and Melbourne. But I don't remember being an awful lot of us in Perth. I think there were only about six of us got on that ship. I remember one girl called Jimmy Kingsbury. She turned up at 19, Div, with me. Sadly, I had a fall when I was in Shillong, and I had to go into hospital because I started up an infection. So I missed my unit going to Rangoon. So I had to come follow on from that. So we all, the journey from there, of course, was on a small coastal steamer to Rangoon. And then, I got a lift on a small plane which belonged to General Rees. It was a small Auster, I suppose. And he was going back to Tongu, where my posting was, with 19 div, and so I got a lift up in that. Fascinating, because I'd never been in a plane, as you could imagine one's feeling. And in a small plane like that, you look down at both sides, you know, a wonderful feeling. It was quite exhilarating. And then we landed, very bumpy landing, in this funny sort of scruffy little field. And then off he went. He had a jeep waiting. He said, "Oh, the Wasbys will pick you up." Remember sitting under a tree, and it was very quiet. And I thought, goodness, I hope they know I'm here. Eventually, I could hear a jeep in the distance and the dust flying. And up came a Wasby to collect me. And, of course, the roads were very unmade, so dust was an awful problem. And so then they took me to our mess. She took me to our mess, which again was a house, which must have been quite a nice house at one time, but of course there were no windows or doors left in it. So one had to put up sort of towels and sheeting and anything else to give ourselves a bit of privacy. And our morning started quite early, sometimes 7 o'clock. We'd put all the stores all onto the trucks, and off we would go. Sometimes of quite long distances, perhaps 2 hours or 3 hours journey.
That would be a canteen, would it, the truck?
Yes, we had British other ranks who drove it. They were wonderful, very patient with us all. And then when we got to the unit, we usually followed in the jeep, which was a bit more comfortable. And then you put down a sort of what a counter, and then sold whatever we had. So we had quite a range of things, like toothpaste and soaps and talc powder. And I think it comes into one of the Jinthi books. In our case, it was a Brill cream. There was a West African unit. And the chaps, adored Brill cream, which they put on their bread and butter instead of butter, which we thought was very strange. We couldn't understand why they were buying so much of it, but evidently it wasn't to smear in their hair. But I think the units enjoyed it, you know, it's a complete change. You can imagine a few girls arriving, and everywhere we went, they were marvellous and enjoyed seeing us, I suppose. We had a static canteen in 19 Div in Tongu. It was a great big basher. And that had tables and chairs and benches. And there in the evening we doled out, they bought actually bacon and eggs, sausages, and slabs of cake, and big wads of bread and butter, and mugs of tea galore, as you could imagine, and general chit-chat, which they, of course, they loved. But that was quite fun, but quite hard work in the evening because it was always very crowded. Everybody wanted to get their bacon and eggs at the same time. And we had two cooks dealing with that. And we just running backwards and forwards, collecting it all. But it was a great variety. I think one of the happiest times was when we went up to a hill station called Kalaw, K-A-L-A-W. And another one called Tongji, T-A-U-N-G-Y-I, I think it was. Again, quite high up in amongst the hills.
Were you visiting pockets of troops there?
Yes, there were quite a lot. And I think probably some of the troops were probably sent up as a local leave, probably. Give them a change because it was cool. And that was absolutely fascinating. We loved that. Again, we had quite a nice house, which was a fairly reasonable house. Get into the cool. The hillsides were covered in poinsettias and wild cherry blossom. It was fascinating there. That. And of course, always enjoyed flowers. We had a Jap officer, just a young chap, and two Jap prisoners who looked after the garden and kept the drive tidy. And I remember going back with my arm full of blossom, thought I would do an arrangement. I managed to find an old Chinese sort of vase thing. And this young chap watched me for a time, shook his head, and he came forward and took it out and redid it most beautifully in the typical Ikebana, and found me lovely sort of rocks and stones round about. It was extraordinary. It was so difficult because one wasn't allowed to fraternize, but it seemed this young chap who probably was, you know, can't have been much more than about 20. And he had this natural gift. And of course, in a way, it's very typical Chinese, that beauty side of things. And having been to Japan afterwards, I realized how natural it is to them, isn't it? You know, everything is so artistically done. I don't probably so much now, but a lot of their places are, and their gardens and everything, aren't they? Mm-hmm. With the rocks and the sort of swept gravel and things.
So that you, you know, you were saying there was a non-fraternization rule, was there, with the
Yes,
Japanese?
Well, I think you instinctively had that. I mean, we weren't, because being as we weren't like that. I mean, it came naturally, we were unrespected. But you kept a sort of cool distance, as you might say. But this young chap was always bringing up flowers and things for us. And so I think he probably needed that contact with the civilized part of life, you know, because it must have been pretty awful for a lot of them.
Yes. Were there any problems with the Japanese? I know the war had ended, but...
Not very much, but we did come up against it a bit because one of our journeys up to Tongji, which was quite a two-hour journey on from Kalor, we passed a burnt-out truck, which had only happened about 2 days before because there was still a lot of pockets of Japanese resistance in the jungle. And, of course, that probably was one of the reasons why a lot of our troops were still there, you know. So that was quite interesting. We were there for Christmas, and we went to the church service, and it was mostly 2nd Battalion of the Welsh Regiment were there. And their singing, of course, as you can imagine, was very moving and wonderful to hear. And even after the service, on their way back to their tents round the hills, you could hear their singing. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. A memorable moment for me, I wrote down. I don't think we were there much more than about 2 to 3 months, and then back to Tongu, which wasn't, of course, so nice. But there we are.
The stores, you know, how did that work?
Yes, they worked very well because that was the army arranged for the stores to come to us. We had to keep very strict inventory of what we had and what we were ordering, and we had inspection of that. So that must have been the local army inspection to see that that was all going according to plan. And that the inventory was up to date, I suppose. I can't remember an awful lot of that because probably I didn't have to do very much of it because we were six of us in the unit, and Jesse Nicholson was our lieutenant, and then we had two corporals, I think. Don't think we had a sergeant in that one. Yeah, I think there were, and then the three of us privates.
Were the women, you know, in your unit, had they gone right the way through the war with the WASBs? Or like you, had they been recruited?
They'd been recruited in... Two, I think, came up from Australia. Certainly one, Jimmy Kingsbury. The others, I think, came from India. They were probably army families who lived in India, you know, Indian army families, mostly. Jessie certainly was. She was Indian army. Pam Mitchell, her father was a tea planter in Assam, so that's how she got into the WASBs. Another Ruth Jobson, again, I think her family were Indian Army. I don't know what they're, whether the other girl was, I think she was Indian Army families. They were mostly Army families.
Did you have any Indian or Burmese?
Latterly we did, but mostly in Rangoon. And they were delightful. I remember writing that down. We had one girl with us for a short time. They were very nice, delightful, as you can imagine. Very gentle people. We're rather like the Thais, really. You know, very neat and spotlessly clean, as you can imagine, with their little bajus and long lungis.
Were you appreciated by the troops, you know, going up to
terribly, terribly. Again, in our book, the Chinthi book, there are letters from chaps saying, you know, they just couldn't believe it in these odd, out-of-way places. Suddenly we turned up with our canteens.
Did they like to talk to you?
Yes, endlessly, endlessly. I mean, they just probably didn't really want to buy anything, but it was just to be able to chat, you know. And as I say, that was particularly in the static canteens, of course, that was the great thing.